The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 104 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, and I'm so glad you're listening. This week I have a fun interview with Sterling Gates, comics creator of such wonderful things as recently Justice League Vibe, done all kinds of spectacular things, and is just fun to talk with as well. Now, unfortunately, after this interview was recorded, Justice League Vibe has been canceled, but he does have a lot of good things to say about the character and about diversity in comics. Also, he'll inform us about an interesting roommate that he has, and that story is just in time for Halloween. So I'm sure you're going to want to listen to everything that he's got to say. Good stuff. Then we get into the week's news, and I talk about the previews for the coming week. There's quite a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Sterling Gates, a comics creator and writer of many good things, including taking over Vibe from Justice League of America, and also wrote a Man of Steel prequel, which I really liked. How are you doing today, Sterling?
I'm doing well. It's hot as heck here in Los Angeles, so.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the way it is all the time. It's just hotter than normal.
Sure. I think we got up to like 80.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's a hot heat. You know, we're a city of concrete, so when it's 80, it feels like it's about 110.
Because it's a dry heat out there, as I remember. I stayed in one summer out in Los Angeles, and the lady said, good thing it's a dry heat. It doesn't bother you so much.
Yeah, so it's not really muggy, but it's still really hot. Like, you're sweating either way, really. So
I never get that. I don't understand the difference between that. Anyway, why don't we start out by talking about your prequel for the Man of Steel film, which, by the way, I really enjoyed.
Cool.
Great
Thanks.
Movie. Now, did you have to get a copy of the script? How did you get involved with this process of making the prequel happen?
If you know about my work and you know one of my frequent collaborators is Jeff Johns, comic industry giant Jeff Johns. He called me last November and said they were thinking about doing this Man of Steel book and asked if I'd be interested. Of course, I said yes. And then he called me the next day and he says, and I've got even better news. It stars Supergirl, which, again, if you know my work at all, like I wrote DC Supergirl for about 2.5 years, 28 issues.
Right.
And I was ecstatic because Supergirl's one of my favorite characters. And the opportunity to do something Supergirl related was very, very exciting for me. So that was last year, and then around mid-January, I got a call from Warner Brothers that I was going to have to come in to Zack Snyder's bungalow on the Warner lot and go over the script and some artwork. as well as sign all the non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, they call them. I signed one that was literally as thick as my forearm. Like,
oh my goodness.
It was like 79 pages of, we will sue you if any of this information gets leaked and we trace it back to you. I didn't sign a child away, but I signed everything else I will ever own away to Warner Brothers if any of that information had gone out. So then they took me into a room, a blank room with a table and a chair and the script. I couldn't take notes. I couldn't take my phone in. I read the script twice. It took about 4 hours. And then I left there and I had a meeting with Jeff, and they had sort of a really skeletal idea for that prequel book. Like, they knew it starred Supergirl. They knew it was set on old Krypton thousands of years ago. And they wanted to tell a story set within the great age of expansion for Kryptonians. Mm-hmm. Which in the movie, it's that great shot around Jor-El and Clark, and as the background animates with all the different Kryptonian ships and stuff, like, none of that was in the script. So I was kind of going blind when I did my work. But like, it was very Krypton based, and they really wanted to deal. Like, I didn't know about the cool. I mean, since it's thousands of years ago, they probably haven't developed it yet. But like, the cool animation technology that like Kelix has for his face, like all that cool stuff. Again, we didn't see any of it, so we were flying a little blind. Long story short, so I talked with Jeff. He and Goyer and Zack Snyder had a very skeletal structure for what they wanted to tell. They knew it wanted to be it was thousands of years ago. It was a stowaway story on the ship that crashes into Earth, which, mm-hmm. as you saw in the movie, and I'm sorry, listeners that didn't see the movie yet, there is a Kryptonian ship hidden on Earth that's been there for 18,000 years, forever. Mm-hmm. And it was to them, this was the opportunity to tell the story of how it got there. And so Jeff and I really sat down and developed a page-by-page breakdown. We sent that out to Warner Brothers. And when you do something like this, you've got to send it to all the producers' offices, as well as the Warner Brothers, like the main office that's handling all the Man of Steel stuff. So it went to Warner and the Nolans and the Snyders and Goyer. And that was just the outline. And then that came back with a thumbs up. So then we wrote the script over like a week and then sent that out. And then that had to go through that whole process of approvals. And then Jerry Ordway drew that book for us, and I think it's a very nice piece of Ordway work. Like, I think Jerry Ordway is one of the modern masters of American comics, and mm-hmm. he's always really great to work with, and I was very thankful we got him for this project.
Had you worked with him before?
I have, a couple times. Jerry drew my first DC Comics story back in 2007. Mm. It's a Green Lantern backup story called Fear is a Baby's Cry. And so I worked with him on that, and then I worked with him again during Blackest Night. Again, Jeff and I work a lot together. We're very good fun. It's always fun to collaborate with Jeff and write books with him. And so we wrote a 2-issue Blackest Night tie-in, and Ordway drew that as well.
Yeah, I want to interview Mr. Johns, but he's impossible to get a hold of. So someday he's my holy grail that I'd like to interview at some point, because I'm also a huge fan of his stuff.
Yeah.
So it's great that you get to work with him, because he tells stories like very few people do today. So that's really cool that he thinks of you and brings you into the process like that. Now you've seen the movie now. What did you think of it?
I thought a lot of things about it, actually.
Okay.
I think it's a really great movie. I think it's a really interesting, different take on Superman. I think what they set out to accomplish and what ended up on screen is it's a pretty damn amazing accomplishment, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The scope of the story is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of complaints, and people online have been really upset about the ending. I think because we're moving into a serialized storytelling format for movies, right? Like, you can, mm-hmm. you can ask a question in movie one that we answer partially in movie two and then pay out in a big way in movie three. Because we're moving into that, you're seeing something that's sort of structured like that. Like, you're seeing the end of Man of Steel, like, it's got a big question mark over it to be continued.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to know what happens in movie two. Like, I want to know, mm-hmm. is humanity going to accept this alien guy? Are they going to see, like, I really wanted, for me, that scene with Ma Kent at the end, pulls his shirt open and there's the Super S, and she says, you say it's a symbol of hope. Like, now, because of all this destruction that's happened in Metropolis, Clark, it is up to you to make this symbol a symbol of hope. Hmm. And Clark goes, well, oh, damn, Mom, you're totally right. And so we sort of get the implication of where he's going to go. Now, maybe that scene at the top of the next movie, maybe it'll never be addressed, and I'm just, you know, daydreaming. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really interesting that we live in an era of movies that are now serialized like the comics that we love. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That offers us a lot of opportunities that we didn't necessarily have before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the Nolans, of course, I love their Batman trilogy. Now I'm a big old Batman guy myself. And so I loved all three of those. Some people didn't like the third one as much. I thought it was a perfect way to end it. You know, I don't understand the criticism of the movie. I know that there are people that like Superman and the silky drawers. And I am past that. As long as it looks good, I'm perfectly happy with it. So the armor that Jim Lee developed is perfectly good with me. So I when I saw the movie, and I, of course, Henry Cavill, just Superman, just great. And it was neat that you drew his likeness, Jerry Ordway drew his likeness really well on the ship towards the end of the book. So I like that really well too. So I think it's the perfect companion piece for the film, and it helps you understand what's going on. I think you can read it after you've seen the movie and still get a lot out of it.
It was very intentional. You know, we talked originally about, do we have Superman in this book? You know, it's a prequel. It was a Walmart exclusive digital prequel, but mm-hmm. we talked a lot. Do we show Superman? And it was Jeff's idea, and it was a brilliant. And again, Jeff's one of the master writers of comics. It was Jeff's idea to open with Superman in costume, and then walk you back through the origin back to old Krypton. And, you know, so those first two pages, I think, are really damn cool. You start with familiar and walk you backwards. And so that's where we got a Superman page there, and then we got another one at the very end where we show him on the boat, which is exactly where it picks up in the movie. It was important to be a connective tissue, especially where that ship came from and how it came to be. Like, there was always going to be a good story there. It was just identifying and then executing that story.
Well, it's very cool. I got to read it, and I really liked it, so I was very happy with it. So it must be neat, though, to have your name associated with the film in some way, even tangentially.
It's pretty bizarre. As a result of doing that book, I was invited by the Oklahoma City Library System. I'm from Oklahoma originally. I guess let's start there. I'm originally from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. When I did that Man of Steel book, one of my friends is a librarian out in Oklahoma City, and she talked to her supervisors. They were doing a Superman celebration that weekend the movie came out. Mm-hmm. So she used me writing the Man of Steel prequel book as a way to get the libraries interested in having me come out and teach comic writing workshops for kids. Mm. So the weekend that Superman came out, I was in Oklahoma City teaching kids about comics and how I approach writing a comic and how I approach making a superhero or supervillain. It was great. I did four libraries and four libraries in 2 days and talked to about 80 kids.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. So that's kind of neat. You get associated with the movie. I guess you'll always be associated with this movie to some degree.
To a very small footnoted degree, maybe, yeah. But for me, the coolest thing was being able to go home and celebrate Superman as a result of working on this thing, celebrate with a generation of kids that were seeing Superman for the first time. You know, that
cool.
I thought that was an added perk, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very neat. So why don't we move into your current project? Word's out now that you have taken over Justice League of America's Vibe.
Yes.
I'm just curious as to what kinds of things you have in mind for that character.
A lot of what we're doing in that book has to deal with Argus, which is a group in the New 52 DCU that kind of operates on the same level as like Marvel's S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. They are the group within Argus that Vibe works with are responsible for tracking down interdimensional breachers. And because of the nature of Vibe's powers, he can see / identify and help capture these breachers. Mm-hmm. So he's more or less an interdimensional border cop, so to speak. We're addressing that. We're dealing with that. One of the things I really wanted to dig into is Argus is not really all that they seem. You put a kid who's a very young superhero, very young in his career. If you put him in a situation where suddenly he's noticing everything's a little off. And then you throw him up against characters who are continually telling him, like, look, man, what you're doing is not necessarily the best thing. Mm-hmm. So he begins to question the authority of his organization that he's only been in for a few months. Mm-hmm. Where does that take you? Does he act on those suspicions? Does he sit back and continue doing his job until better information presents itself? Is he proactive? Is he is he passive? For me, it was, well, he's a young kid. He's learning his place in the world. I think he's very proactive. You know, I you were like at 18, but I was very, very, very proactive in my future. And now Vibe has allied himself with some people that aren't necessarily doing what's right. That creates conflict, both with mm-hmm. him and around him. Mm-hmm. We get to explore sort of him coming to terms of being a superhero, quote unquote, as well as in terms of being an employee of an organization that isn't necessarily on the up and up. Mm-hmm. On top of all that, they put him on the Justice League of America for reasons unknown to him. We, the readers, know that he's on the Justice League because his powers can fight the Flash's powers. Mm-hmm. If you're reading Justice League of America, you know that. Mm-hmm. So you got a lot of threads to deal with. On top of that, for people that have read all the issues so far, mm-hmm. Vibe decides to help out a girl named Gypsy, who long term DC readers will remember from the Justice League Detroit era. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's doing the right thing for Gypsy. Argus and Amanda Waller thinks he's doing something very dangerous, and so she sends the Suicide Squad after Vibe to bring him back in. Actually, that's at the end of Five. Like, he's brought back in to Argus, and he's incarcerated in this giant interdimensional prison. That's sort of like it reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you remember the old Superman, like the intergalactic zoo that Superman has. It's just full of random wild creatures. Mm-hmm. Argus has a room like that is full of various breachers, we call them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, longtime DC fans, like, we're throwing Easter egg after Easter egg into this book, but there's a lot there, and there's a lot we're going to deal with in upcoming issues. When you put someone like Vibe in the middle of a powder keg like that, I mean, you got to light the fuse and see what happens. And mm-hmm. Waller, at the end of Five, the fuse is lit. We'll see what blows up as a result.
Very cool. Well, of course, the character has a long history, and of course, he's even been shown in shorts on DC Nation on Cartoon Network. And the bad news is it seems like he's always doing the street dancing thing. And I'm always kind of like, God, that was like 20 years ago. I don't know if people even do that anymore. So I'm glad that you're taking him in a different direction and using his powers with a more modern feel to it. So that makes me happy.
Yeah, it was important that he wasn't a stereotype. Mm. I didn't write the first two issues. Again, going back to Jeff and a writer named Andrew Kreisberg wrote the first two issues, and they did a great job. They did a very straightforward job presenting him as just a teenage kid who's kind of in over his head. And I've tried to take those threads and develop them and run with them. When he was introduced in the 80s, he was, I guess a stereotype is the best way to put it. And he was not the easiest character to like. They really went out of their way to always put him in direct conflict with his teammates on the Justice League. And as a result, I didn't like him much growing up. Like, I didn't think much of the character. He was always sort of this semi-jokey guy because he was known for being a jerk and for dancing. And so we have an opportunity here with the New 52 and with this Universal reboot that we've done to really reinvent him sort of from the ground up and present him as a more realistic type of character. Now, I mean, and I say realistic when, like, he fights a shark man and he can crack open dimensions with his hands and stuff. Like, when I say realistic, I just mean present him as the teenager who has to deal with big, weighty issues instead of present him as a set of then early 1980s gang life stereotypes. Mm-hmm. They took a lot of cues, I think, from his original appearance. I think, and I haven't talked to Jerry Conway or anybody about this who created him. I think he watched The Warriors that movie, that old late 70s gang fight movie, The Warriors. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a character that is like The Warriors. Now, The Warriors is about a bunch of different gangs, and each one sort of has their own style, and it's super exaggerated style. Like, there's the baseball team of, like, there's a gang full of dudes in baseball uniforms with bats and, like, skull makeup on. And so they run around New York beating up people with baseball bats. Like, very exaggerated, almost comical, in the comedic sense, not the comic book sense, almost comical approaches at portraying gang life. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of wonder if a lot of that played into the decision to make Vibe, to present Vibe as he was presented in the 80s. Like, it was that and sort of like a weird West Side Story kind of reference, making him Puerto Rican. And he was a very strange character. Mm-hmm. We have an opportunity to rehabilitate him and his image somewhat. And we're working hard to do that. You know, I'm trying to tell a pretty fun, but big, but important, but sweeping story across the DC universe, both in our dimension and in other dimensions.
Mm-hmm. Well, before you and I started recording, we chatted a little bit about a hornet's nest that I am particularly interested in. I don't understand why in today's market we'll accept white aliens, but we don't seem to want to support diverse comics characters. When the New 52 started out, we had Static Shock, we had Mr. Terrific, we've had all kinds of different things, and not only at DC, but Marvel too, the black characters seem to struggle. And also the Hispanic ones too. So you and I chatted a little bit about, I have this notion, and I don't know if it's valid or not, that I just don't get what we have to do to make these characters, you know, into the mainstream. I mean, Marvel turned the ultimate Spider-Man into, from Peter Parker to Miles Morales, and it started out big, but of course now after time it's watered down some. But I just, at first it bothers me that they stick him in a name like that. There ought to be some way to make these characters shine that doesn't necessarily steal stuff, and this is the stereotype to me, of stuff from other people. You know, take a white man's thing. But the truth of the matter is that it just, I don't get it. I don't understand why, like Steel doesn't have his own book, and I don't understand why all these great black characters like Black Lightning and things like that, why they don't have their own book. So I'm hopeful that what you're doing with Vibe will kind of set the tone for how to make successful, diverse comic characters succeed. What's your feeling on that?
I think some of it has to do with name recognition. You know, kids know who Superman is. They don't know who Steel is. Mm-hmm. Static Shock was a great cartoon series in the early 2000s. The fact that there wasn't a comic book out at the same time as that show, I never really understood. Mm-hmm. When we started doing New 52 stuff, me and a couple of their comic writers and artists did sort of a mini tour of Southern California comic shops. And so every Saturday for a while, we would sign at places. Like, you know, September 2011, somewhere in there. And one of these signings, we went to a restaurant next door, and we were talking about comics, and our waiter was like, yeah, I really dig comic books. And we're like, oh, what are you reading? He's like, oh, I don't, you know, read. I used to read them when I was a kid. And you know, the next question is always, who's your favorite character? And he goes, well, you know, he's not a comic, but, like, I was really like Static Shock. And all of us looked at each other and were like, you know, that's a comic book out, like, right now, right? And he had no idea. It just hadn't even occurred to him that there might be a Static Shock comic, but he watched the cartoon when he was, and this kid was probably, I don't know, 18 or something, so he was probably 8 or 9 watching that cartoon. So you had an opportunity there, and sometimes those opportunities get taken, sometimes they don't. In terms of regendering characters, i.e. making Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man, like, in part, I think that's done because there is a name recognition for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It's tough because it's a very hard line to tread, and it's a very precarious line to tread. And you don't want to be offensive, but you also don't want to alienate your fans in other ways. So let's say if Steel, which was a terrible Steel movie, by the way, but let's say that movie had been wildly successful, spawning a number of sequels and comic books and an animated show and all this stuff. Suddenly then you have an entire generation of kids who know who Steel is. And those kids will eventually turn to comics, or at least have a passing interest in comics, and that will help generate interest in that character. Yes? I mean, that seems pretty logical.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, those attempts ultimately kind of failed. So then it always made me ask the question, like, why don't we generate new characters for that media and then bounce them out into comics instead of starting things in the comics and hoping they bounce out into new media? You know, I like I said, I did this comic writing thing, and more kids knew who Ben 10 was because there's a ton of those comics and toys. More kids knew who Ben 10 was than knew who, let's say, Luke Skywalker was.
Hmm.
Which is crazy, because Star Wars is everywhere, but Star Wars hasn't been about Luke Skywalker since 1983.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's about Anakin and Darth Vader and all this stuff. Like, so kids know who Anakin Skywalker is because they watch the Clone Wars cartoons, but they know who Ben 10 is, who has a comic, kind of, I think. But it's not like blowing the doors off in terms of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of comic fans like the familiar, and when Batman sells what it does, they're probably not going to, you know, like when Batman sells what it does, but Batwing doesn't. That sort of says to me the name is what matters here.
Mm-hmm. I hope that Vibe will change the landscape some, because I really would like to see these people. I mean, my favorite black character, or my favorite character, honestly, not just black, but on television, has always been Ben Sisko from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Very diverse, very interesting, you know, faults as well as strengths. And I always thought that he was one of the best diverse characters I've ever seen. And I just hope that, you know, I think you're right in the sense that I think some people go into the stereotype because they don't know exactly what to do. I mean, what do you do with the Hispanic character? But on the other hand, you've had, like, the Atom is now a Hispanic female, I think. And we've had the Atom was also a Japanese American or Korean American hero for a while. I always kind of worry when you have to take a character. I guess if he's not doing well, you kind of hope that a diverse person in the costume will add some interest to it. But I'm just not sure. I wish there was some way to make these things more successful. I've just something that I think about a lot. So I hope that Vibe will make a big difference, is what I hope.
For me, Vibe is important because I have a Hispanic niece and a Hispanic nephew. And I welcomed the opportunity to write a character that might have had similar life experiences to them.
Mm.
It was the opportunity to create a set of characters or deal with a set of characters that I'd never written for or with.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy writing this book, and hopefully they like Vibe when they're old enough who Vibe is. You know, they're mm-hmm. 3 and 2, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you much success with that, because I really want to see Vibe be a big name. I mean, it's got Justice League of America on as far as the title, at least it did at the beginning.
Mm.
And so I'm hopeful that'll help. You're right about name recognition. Maybe that'll draw some more folks in than might not otherwise give it a try. So I hope you have good. I hope he develops his own little rogues gallery, too. I would kind of like to see him have his own villains. I always get a little frustrated. You know, you did Supergirl for a while. I'm upset when Supergirl's villains are always other people's villains coming to visit and bother her. I want to see her have her own villains, because she merits that. And I don't think with Vibe the same thing. Now, I don't want stereotypical ones, of course. I would like to see something that actually modern and interesting, and something that would work or be against him, like the Joker is to Batman. So I hope you come up with some good stuff. I'm really looking forward to it.
I would say be sure to check out Vibe number 6 for the first big Vibe rogue villain. Rogue.
Oh, cool.
He shows up in the last few pages of Vibe 6.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that greatly, because I think that's going to be neat. Now, why don't we talk for a couple minutes before we get done about you started off on the New 52. You were writing Hawk and Dove, and you set things up really interestingly, and I'm saddened that that book, you know, didn't last as long as I would like it to, because I always liked the characters. I always thought they were great, even back in the Ditko days. So it must have been fun, though, to write those characters. Did you go into that having an idea of what you wanted to do with the characters, or did they kind of come to you and say, this is what we'd like to see?
I'd been developing a pitch with Rob Liefeld for a long time before that book. We'd been developing a Hawk and Dove pitch for a long time. Before the reboot was going to happen, we were working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Hawk and Dove were big characters in Brightest Day, that big crossover that happened right after Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of breakout characters in that book. And so we talked a lot about developing a big year-long story for them. And the idea was Hawk and Dove get their powers from the gods of war and peace, right? Like that's their basic setup. But the idea was that while there were many gods of war, there was only one god of peace that gave Dove her powers. And the gods of war escape from their confines and embed themselves in various members of the DC universe. You know, Man and Batman and they're all over the place. And it's up to Hawk and Dove to seek them out and stop them from causing, you know, World War V or whatever. So that was our original pitch. It was a lot of big action. It was stuff that Rob really wanted to draw, and it was stuff that I thought would be fun to write and have. You know, Hawk doesn't fly, so like the fight with Hawkman was going to be in the sky, and he, like, most of it's Hawkman flying around beating up Hawk as Hawk falls. Just stuff like that, and then interspersed you get into your dramatic moments with these characters, and it was a very big pitch. It was an ambitious pitch. And then the reboot, they let us know about the reboot and asked us to retool that pitch to be a version of the book that you ended up getting. So we did that, and you know, the beginning of the New 52 was a very sort of tumultuous time for both editorial and creative staff. We had a lot of sort of hurdles to try and get over and deal with, and somewhere in the middle of that, the nature of our story changed. And our initial idea for that was a very different book than what it ended up. Like, I mean, that was a very roundabout way to answer that question, I think, but...
Well, that's fine, because I love the characters, and I enjoyed your work on it, and I was really sorry when I saw that that you were leaving, and then after that, then they canceled the book, and so I'm still kind of grieving over that. I always enjoyed those characters, so I'd like to see them come back again sometime.
Issues 5 and 6 were very different. Halfway through issue 5, sort of Rob takes over, and so, like, issue 5 is sort of the strange hybrid script of what I'd written for issue 5 and then what Rob did to kind of wrap up that story, and then his issue 6 became like a crossover with Batman or something. But originally, like, issue 5 was them tracking down these bad guys, and they strike a deal with a demon, basically, and to get into the Chaos Dimension. And then issue 6 was going to be a huge fight with Condor and Swan and Hawk and Dove across the Chaos Dimension. And finally, resolving that story, so you get 6 nice issues of Hawk, Dove, Condor, Swan. And then, like, some pretty big revelations of other avatars of War and Peace that exist in the DCU. That script, unfortunately, because of the changeover, because Rob took over writing it, that script kind of got spiked. No one ever saw it. The original ending to that arc was pretty damn different than what it ended up being. That's fine. I mean, that's their prerogative. I don't own these characters. Like, it was no real skin off my back, so to speak. I wish he'd drawn that issue, though. It was all, I don't know if you remember in the old series that he did in the 80s, like, when they go to the Chaos Dimension, it goes sideways, so everything's widescreen sideways, so the whole issue was going to be sideways like that.
Oh, wow.
Which would have been, again, very different and something kind of unique, but oh well.
Well, you know what, to save it, you can get to use it some other place, I imagine. You had also gotten to do one of Jack Kirby's characters, and that was Captain Victory.
Yes.
Which must have been fun, because Kirby always has this huge galaxy-spanning kind of thing, and it must have been great to be able to touch, you know, his characters and to be able to bring some new life to that.
It was a great project. I really enjoyed developing that world, all the Galactic Ranger stuff. You know, I love big sci-fi like that, and I like stuff on that kind of scale. I mean, it was a great project, and I was sad to see it end, but, you know, sales didn't really bear it out, and that's the reality of the American comics industry, and that's kind of stuff happens.
Yeah, well, it was great while it lasted, so that's unfortunately, you have to jump onto these good things and support them while you can.
Yeah, and thank you for supporting it. I everyone that read it and has sent me messages about it, like, you know, thank you to all of them. I appreciate every person that read that book. It was a very, very fun book to write. It was a different universe than the DCU, and it was nice to get to play in sort of a different sandbox, so to speak. I love those characters. I think they're all really great. Like, Kirby had great designs, and you can see how that series influenced a lot of other things that came after it, from He-Man to Hellboy. It was a fun project to work on. I was really glad to do it.
Great. Well, those of us who read it enjoyed it, so that's all we can say at this point. So, now, do you have any other projects you're working on besides Vibe and, well, you did Manistel, that's done already. Anything else besides Vibe that's coming up that we should be aware of?
You know, I wrote a web series that just finished shooting, actually, called The Post-Human Project. It's a teenage superhero web series that some of my friends put together and produced. And, you know, it's got a website, and I think there's a trailer on YouTube right now. I mean, it's pretty crazy to me. Like, I've never written anything live action that I didn't shoot for me. And so it's very strange to get, like, footage back of something I wrote and I have very little to do with past that point.
Can you kind of give us the TV Guide edition of what the story is about?
Yeah, the poster tagline is 5 high school seniors are about to graduate from the human race. And it's about a guy named Denny. He was in a terrible accident. One of his legs was kind of mutilated, so he can't walk very well. He's graduating high school soon. And so he was a rock climber. He hurt himself in a rock climbing accident. So his friends decide they should take him out for one final, like, let's conquer the mountain, both symbolically and physically, and help, you know, cheer you up and get you back on the right path. So they take him up through a lot of different things. All of those kids end up getting some type of superpower. And Denny's power is healing. His body heals, kind of like Wolverine. He gets a healing factor. But not only can he heal himself when he's injured, he can heal other people. You know, and one guy gets teleportation. One girl throws fire. I mean, it's a teenage drama with superpowers. And it was super fun to work on. You know, some of my friends approached me about writing it. They had a story kind of sketched out and a draft of a script. And I took that and used that as the skeleton for what I did for the script. And then they shot it. And like I said, there's a trailer online. It all looks great. It's very weird to be hands off, because, like, through film school, when you write something, you shoot it and you have some degree of control. Here, I'm just sort of at everybody else's mercy. So it's a fun project. Everything I've seen of it looks really nice. So
great.
You know, a lot of guys worked really hard to make it happen. So if you're listening to this, thanks to them.
Okay, well, we'll look for it, I guess, on YouTube. And do you know the website location, posthumans.net or .com or something?
Actually, the website is posthumanmovie.com.
Okay, makes sense. So it's going to be one movie, or it's going to be a series of movies?
It's a web series, so they're designed to be like 7 to 10 minute long. They don't have a distribution pattern set up yet. I'm not sure. You know, there's sort of a lot up in the air. They just have, you know, they're still editing and doing post-production, that kind of thing. As far as I know, it will be a web series, but I would say check posthumanmovie.com or their Twitter feed, which is, I think, Posthuman Project. I've been tweeting. If you follow me on Twitter, I've been tweeting about it. Sort of gone. So find more information there.
Okay. One last question. When I saw you on a DC panel out in San Diego at the Comic-Con a couple of years ago, it came up during the conversation that everybody was having that you have a ghost for a roommate in your apartment. You live in an apartment in a house? Where do you live at? What kind of place do you live?
Apartment. I live in an apartment in Los Angeles.
Okay.
It is haunted, my haunted apartment. The day I moved in, the woman down the hall, like, the U-Haul guys took their dolly and I closed the door and locked it. And then there was a knock on the door and the woman down the hall, I opened the door and she introduced herself and said, hello. I said, hello, you have an angel watching over you. And I said, excuse me? And she says, my friend's spirit. And she holds up her hands up. My friend's spirit resides here. And I said, uh-huh. And so she told me the story of, her friend had lived here for 25 years, and she unfortunately passed away. She was very old. And this woman, the neighbor, was the person who took care of her in her old age and was the woman who found her. And she said that her spirit resided in my apartment. And I was like, haha, okay, crazy old lady. And then here comes a guy down the hall, and he looks in. He goes, hey, you just moving in? And I'm like, yeah, what's up, man? I'm Sterling. He goes, yeah, I'm Matt. And then he notices this woman, and he goes, oh, no, what are you telling him? And she says, oh, I'm just telling him all about Pearl. And he looks at me, and he looks at her, and he goes, don't freak him out the first day. And he walks out. And I'm like, ha, 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 that's super funny, guys, like pranking the new guy. That's really nice of you. So the old lady leaves, and then a couple weeks pass and nothing weird happens. And then I run into another neighbor and we're in the elevator. And she says, so how is living in your apartment? I said, it's great. Like, I get plenty of sun. I overlook the pool. Like, it's a nice little joint. And she said, have there been any incidents yet? And I said, incidents? And she leans in close and goes, hauntings. And I said, no. And she goes, well, she likes you more than the other ones. And I was like, what? And then ding, the door's open and the lady walks out. So I've lived here a couple years now, and apparently I'm being allowed to live here most of the time. There have been strange happenings, stuff opening, closing. You know, one day my DVDs were all rearranged in reverse alphabetical order or whatever. But then one day I was hanging out with my friends and they were in the shower or whatever, and I was leaning against the door jamb of the bathroom and I was scrolling through my phone looking for something. And if you can imagine, you're holding your phone up, like looking at it, and then the door jamb is behind your phone, right? So you're focused on that phone. Mm-hmm. Imagine your eye rack focusing off of your phone onto the door jamb where mm-hmm. it says in carved letters, leave now.
Oh my.
I lost it. I completely lost it because it wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
My friend gets out of the shower and I'm like, you know I told you this haunting stuff, like, and we had a laugh about it, but this kind of stuff isn't very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I didn't do that. I'm like, no, I didn't do that. And you're the only one who's here at all ever. So clearly it was you. And she goes, I didn't do that at all. And I'm like, no, this is really not funny. And she goes, no, it wasn't me. I still don't know how that got there. No idea.
It wasn't aimed at you, was it?
There's no way to know. Talked to neighbors that have lived in this building for any length of time. Apparently, there's a 2-week turnover rate for most people that have moved into this apartment.
Wow.
They move in, and then something happens, and they immediately move out. And
wow.
I've been here for 2 years. I've done all the tips and tricks that people recommend for dealing with spirits. Again, it's mostly a lot of just kind of random weird stuff. It's never malicious, which is one another thing that they say, you know, spirits can get. It's just been a lot of strange, strange stuff. Here's the trick of it all, and people ask, why do you still live there? My rent is cheap. It's the cheapest rent I've ever had in LA. Let me put it that way. Like, if I had this apartment in any other building anywhere in the city, my rent would be probably double or three times what I pay now.
Well, Sterling, I wish you a lot of success, and I really appreciated The Man of Steel, and I hope your name is always associated with that successful movie. I really do.
Thank you for this interview. I really appreciate you contacting me and talking to me on it.
Thanks a lot.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
Get to the latest news. Now, last weekend was the New York Comic Con, and there was a lot of coverage here at MajorSpoilers.com. So if you want to catch up on what happened during that weekend, please be sure to go to the site and pick that up. I'm going to talk about a couple of stories that weren't included in that, just to kind of move a little forward. So let's get right to the fact that John Layman is going to be working on Batman Eternal, a weekly series that's going to begin in April for DC Comics. Now, I had written a column about his work on the book, and I was sorry to hear he was leaving, and the internet told me that he was going to Catwoman. And you should always believe the internet. Yeah, right. He's actually going to Batman Eternal. He's going to be part of Detective Comics number 27, which is a 96-page issue that features work by Paul Dini, Brad Meltzer, Greg Hurwitz, and Pete Tomasi, among others. And also, the art's going to be Neil Adams, Dustin Nguyen, and Francisco Francavilla. It's going to be an interesting thing. This last story will be an interesting one. I'm going to miss him on Detective, but I think he'll do a great job on this weekly comic. I hope Batman can keep going forward because I'm looking forward to the exploration of Gotham City that's going to take place during Batman Eternal. So be sure to be ready. Get those weekly comics coming next April. A lot of problems had come with J.H. Williams' intention to conclude the Batwoman run he was working on. Word got out that they were anti-gay marriage at DC Comics because of that. And the truth is, that's not the story. The story actually is that they don't want any marriage at this point in the New 52. And that's to keep people from getting settled down. They think single people do a lot better as far as adventure stories. So they are not going to have that. It had nothing to do with the fact that they were gay. It had everything to do with the fact they were getting married. So, as Batwoman moves forward, we're going to see her focus on some other stuff. Now, before the run ends, of course, we'll see Batwoman face Batman, which is going to be a good thing. And then we'll see her go off in different directions as the new creative team takes over. But I just thought that clarification was important to make. And, of course, to get into Marvel, there is an all-new year coming from all-new Marvel Now, which is a new initiative. It's a second round of relaunches, first issues, and series that are including everything from Avengers to X-Men and beyond. But there are also book titles that are ending and creative teams that are shifting, and the death toll will rise, as always. Rags Morales is an all-new publisher for the all-new Marvel Now, Point One Number One. He's done the occasional Marvel cover before, but this is his first interior work from the publisher after being primarily with DC for a long, long time. So it'll be interesting to see how his work does over on Marvel. There's also going to be a big battle between Logan and Sabretooth. Gee, haven't we seen that before? Then there's going to be the strife of two X-Forces facing off against each other. Then we're going to see Professor X return, looks like. That's what the rumors are saying. No mutant dies forever in the comics, so you can be certain that we'll see Professor X back. Marvel's going to be giving away a Deadpool comic for free, and it's going to have a cover that's reminiscent of the original Spider-Man cover, so look forward to that. There's a series called Revolutionary War that is going to bring several long-unused Marvel UK characters into the mainstream of Marvel. That's going to include Captain Britain and some others. So it'll be nice to see the UK characters get a run. We haven't seen Captain Britain get too much lately. Then there's a death going to be happening to somebody in the Avengers. We don't know who, but I'm sure there's going to be somebody. I wouldn't expect them to stay dead very long. Then there's Alan Moore coming back to Miracle Man, which is, of course, was Marvel Man over in the UK. And when it was brought over here to the US, they changed it from Marvel Man to Miracle Man. The original writer is how he's being referred to, so should be fun to see. I always liked Miracle Man. I thought it was really, really way ahead of its time. So we'll see what Mr. Moore has in store for us with Miracle Man. Then we're going to see some series come to an end. We're going to see Wolverine Max go away. Fantastic Four and FF are also leaving. And we're also losing X-Men Legacy as of number 23. Then there's a missing Hawkeye going on. And there's a skip month happening, and that got people in a panic. So Hawkeye will be back after a one-month break. Fearless Defenders are also coming to an end, and that's December's number 12. So we're cleaning the decks a little. And they're making up for it by double-shipping some books. Marvel's been known to do this with Superior Spider-Man and Avengers. We're going to see two issues in January for the following: All New X-Men, Avengers World, Black Widow, Thunderbolts, The All New X-Factor, Iron Man, Miracle Man, Superior Spider-Man, Thor, God of Thunder, Uncanny X-Force, Cable and the X-Force, and X-Men Legacy. So that should keep people buying comics really well. And that's the news for this week. Let's have a look at the books that are coming out on Wednesday, October 23rd, at least the ones that I'm interested in. And I always like to mention, if you want a full list, go to majorspoilers.com and you'll find it there. From Dark Horse Comics, we have one of my very favorite comics out called Mind Management Number 60. And of course, the management is spelled MGMT. And that is a great book. I hope you're reading it. There is a collected edition out now, so you can get that if you'd like. Then we get to DC, and we have the Absolute Joker Luthor hardcover for $100. I don't even know what's in that, so if you're a good fan of Joker and Luthor, this might be your place.
Then we get Adventures of Superman number 6 for $3.99. That's the print version of the digital first comic. Then there's All-Star Western 24, Aquaman 24. And speaking of digital first, there's Arrow number 12. There's also the hardcover for Batgirl Death of the Family. That's $24.99. Batman the Dark Knight, written by Greg Hurwitz, is $2.99 coming out. The very first issue of Beware the Batman, based on the Cartoon Network show on Saturday mornings, is out. You get Catwoman 24, DC vs. the Masters of the Universe, number 2. Flash 24, I still wish people would really get into that because I really love that. I think it's an unsung book that's out right now. Then we get Green Team, Teen Trillionaires, number 5. Injustice Gods Among Us, number 10. There's another direct-to-digital first. It must be that week where everything comes out that's direct-to-digital. Then there's Justice League, number 24, which is a part of Forever Evil. Justice League Dark, number 24, which is also part of Forever Evil. Lar Flees, number 4, which is a wonderful book. I think it's a great follow-up from his little backup in a previous comic. Then there's Red Lanterns, 24. Superman, 24. Talon number 12, which is a terrific book. Teen Titans number 24. And Tom Strong and the Planet of Peril number 4. If you're interested in the DC collectibles, there's also the new 52 Pandora action figure should be out for about $25. There's also the Batwoman statue from the DC Comics Cover Girls set, and that's about $100. Moving into IDW, we get Doctor Who Volume 3, number 14. Look for that Doctor to change before too very long. Judge Dredd, number 12. There's a collection of the previous Powerpuff Girl comics in what's called Volume 1 Power Party 1999. It's probably worth it to pick those up. Those are fun. Then there's also Rocketeer Spirit Pulp Friction number 2, $3.99. The very first comic of Samurai Jack number 1. That's a previous Cartoon Network series. I'm surprised that's not over in the DC books. But anyway, it's over in IDW. We get Star Trek Ongoing, number 26. Thunder Agents, number 3, by Mr. Hester, which is a fun book. I hope you're getting it. Great, great, great stuff. There's also X-Files Season 10. The first, second, and third issues are getting other printings. So if you'd like to get those and catch up on that series, I recently reviewed that on firstcomicsnews.com, so you might like that. Clone number 11 is the first offering from Image Comics. Great, great stuff. I think that's wonderful. Great Pacific, number 11, by Joe Harris, is also terrific. And we get a limited edition hardcover of Walking Dead 100 Project. $25 for that. I know the Walking Dead folks are out there just dying to get this issue, especially now since the series is back on AMC. For Marvel, we get Daredevil number 32 from Mark Waid. And speaking of Mark Waid, Indestructible Hulk number 14. Daredevil is actually $2.99 and Indestructible Hulk is $3.99. There's Infinity Heist and Infinity Hunt, which tie into Infinity. And there's a book called Marvel Now What number 1 for $3.99. From other companies, we get Green Hornet Legacy number 42. We get the Harbinger number 17, which is $3.99. That's a good book from Valiant. Really like that. And the ever-excellent Superbia Ongoing, number 12, from Boom, written by Grace Randolph. Then there's The Spider, number 15, from Dynamite, and that's $3.99, written by David Liss. Very good stuff. And those are the books coming out this Wednesday, October 23rd. And that's a wrap for this episode. Be back next week when I'll, of course, have more news, reviews, interviews, and previews. But until then, keep reading your comics.
It's not an S. On my world, it means hope.
Well, here it's an S.